This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're going to listen to the second part of our interview with songwriter and singer Paul Anka. Earlier this week, he talked about being a teen idol in the late 50s and early 60s, writing most of his hit songs like Diana, You Are My Destiny, Put Your Head on My Shoulder, and Puppy Love. Part two is about his life after the teen idol era, when he wrote the song that became Frank Sinatra's anthem, My Way, and at Johnny Carson's request, wrote the theme for The Tonight Show. But before we hear that, let's hear another track from Anka's new CD, Rock Swings, which features his swing versions of rock songs from the 80s and 90s by bands like Nirvana, R.E.M., The Pet Shop Boys, and Van Halen. Here's the original version of Van Halen's Jump. That's Van Halen. Here's Paul Anka from his CD, Rock Swings.
I get up, and nothing ever gets me down. You got a tough. I've seen the toughest around, and I know, baby, just how you feel. You gotta roll with the punches to get what's real. Oh, can't you see me standing here? I got my back against the record machine. I ain't the worst that you've seen. Can't you see what I mean? Might as well jump.
Jump.
Might as well jump.
Jump.
Go ahead, jump.
Jump.
Go ahead and jump. Hey, babe, how you been?
Now, you grew up in Canada. Mm-hmm. You're of Lebanese descent. Mm-hmm. And when you were becoming known in the 50s, I think Lebanon probably wasn't on the map for a lot of people. You know what I mean? They probably... Mm-hmm. So, and most of the pop idols in the States, they were Italian, they were Jewish. Their families had been here for a long time. They were African American. Probably weren't a lot of Lebanese pop idols back then.
None.
So, how did you handle your background when it came to publicity? Is it something that you talked about much?
Well, it was what it was. I was first Canadian, brought up a Canadian, so my whole sense was, you know, Canadian upbringing. I had an awareness of my Lebanese background, not a large community, certainly not equatable to Italian, and you know, that was pretty much most singers were Italian. You know,
right.
I was just
raw. And somebody the listeners want to know is like, oh, is he Italian like I am? Is she Jewish like I am? And, you know, like how much do I identify with them?
Right. I think everybody thought, A, I was Jewish or Italian.
Right.
Then it came out in the PR, you know, he's a Canadian of Lebanese descent, and that's what it was. You know, I never really played that up. It certainly at some points people went, oh, you're not Italian. Then I really confused them. I really confused them by moving to Italy in the 60s because I just loved Italy.
Uh-huh.
And I loved the culture. And I when I left my record company and I bought all my masters, I went to RCA Victor and started a company with them. And I said, I want to go to Italy and record in Italian. I just have so much in common with that country. And I went over there and I started this company in Rome. And I started recording in Italian. And I had like a ton of hits. I was selling millions of records. My name over there was like one word, Polonka, Polonka. I check in a hotel, it was under P, Polonka. And I was winning these festivals. I had the greatest time of my life, and I only recorded in Italian, only wrote in Italian with Italian writers, and it was one of the greatest times of my life. So that totally confused everybody.
What point did you start thinking about how you were going to make the transition to adult music? And again, just to go back to the 50s and early 60s, it's a time when a lot of adults in the record industry were thinking rock and roll is this like passing phase, and it's not going to last, and a lot of like young rock and rollers are being groomed to play the copa because mm-hmm. they were going to become adults soon, and they had to make that transition to the adult audience. So what did you think your life would be like as an adult, and what kind of transition did you think you would have to make?
Well, somewhere around 58, 59, you know, I realized that, you know, I was changing and I had to change. I was looking for longevity. And, you know, one has to realize that back then, rock as we know it today, or when it really started in let's say, the mid-60s, and, you know, you had the Beatles with that form of rock and roll, which was light in 64. Prior to that, there was nothing else around except the Rat Pack. So it was all Frank Sinatra, that kind of music, and oops, who are these little kids with this kind of music that no one liked, including Sinatra. You know, we started saying to ourselves, well, where do we go from here? I mean, you know, look at those guys. They're so cool. I mean, they worked that place, Las Vegas and the Copa, and, you know, we want to be like them. And I'd sit with Bobby Darin, and, you know, he and I had that natural instinct to go that way, and we'd say, we want to be like them. And, you know, one of my earlier albums was called Swings for Young Lovers, and it was an album of all old standards with a big swing band, which was very unusual. And then Darin did his. And, you know, I realized that that's where I wanted to go if I had to survive. And, you know, with my management and agents, all of a sudden I was the youngest kid to work the Copa. Then I was the youngest kid to work Vegas in 59 with Sophie Tucker. And I started to say, yeah, you know what, I think I can survive if I learn my craft and I become a performer. And that's what I pursued. And I really started to sense the foundation broadening, which was going to allow me to maybe sustain myself, because I felt that people were looking at me different, not only as the writer, but this performer and this kid that put this tux on. And then Darin became successful with Mac the Knife. So it really looked like we were on the right course. And then we started to merge with Sinatra. And there I was working with them and learning from them and being around these guys. And that was the final goal for us. And then the Beatles came and changed everything.
When you started hanging out with Sinatra and the other guys in the Rat Pack, what were some of the things about their lives that you wanted to emulate, and other things about their lives that you wanted to make sure to avoid?
Yeah, for sure. You know, you're enamored and flattered being around them and being accepted by them. You certainly weren't one of them, but you were you know, on the periphery, but also allowed in. And you know, you like their sense of style. You like the way they dressed. You certainly like the music. You like the way that they sang. You like the way they performed. For a while, you know, you started getting the habits of, they teach you how to play blackjack. Okay, if you don't lose a lot of money. You watch them drink and smoke. You know, life is choices. And I looked and saw what it did to them and saw how they suffered from it. And went, you know what, I'm not going to be the smoker, and I'm just not going to drink the hard liquor, because I need to function. I want to be in control of what I'm doing. So you learn, you know, both sides of that, what to do and what not to do. But it was very exciting to be around. It was a big learning college for me.
Did Sinatra treat you like the kid?
Yeah, I was the kid. You know, everybody, we all had our robes in this famous steam room that we all hung out in. And Dino was the Dague. Joy Bishop had a robe, which was one of his sayings, like, you know, what do you think about that? I forget what it was. Sammy was Smokey the Bear, and mine was the Kid, and that's what Frank called me, the Kid.
And did that seem affectionate to you, or did you feel like you wanted to grow up and not be the Kid anymore?
No, I was I was the kid. I was younger. He was very affectionate about it. I liked it. You know, I called him the old man, ultimately. You know, you got with the program. I never felt in any way inferior. I was certainly younger. You know, I was just sitting there watching this incredible candy store unfold in front of me, from JFK showing up and Marilyn Monroe and all these stars, and, you know, all the activity and all the little boy antics.
My guest is Paul Anka. His latest CD is called Rock Swings. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to the second part of our interview with songwriter and singer Paul Anka. You know, we were talking about your friendship with Sinatra and some of the things that you learned from him. You wrote the English lyric for the song that became his anthem, My Way. The song pre-existed, but it was a French song with a French lyric, a lyric that was totally different from your English lyric. Mm-hmm. How did you first hear the song, and what made you want to write a new lyric for it?
Well, as I said earlier, I was very much into the whole European culture, and I started spending a lot of time in Europe. I'd gotten married there in Paris, and brought my children every year to the south of France to a house that I had down there that we rented. And I was down in Mougins, which is just a little village south of France, and I was listening to the radio, and not unlike Rock Swings, you know, listening to all of these, you know, modern songs and knowing where they fit, I heard this melody on the radio, and I said, there's something more to that. I'd like to get my hands on it. So I called a friend of mine in Paris, who I was in business with a publishing company, and he said, yeah, I know the guy that has the song, and it's, you know, it's not that big a hit, but what do you want? I said, just give it to me, the rights. He said, fine. He said, I'll call the guy. So I flew up to Paris, and I met with him, and they gave it to me. I mean, there was no money changed hands.
There was no money? Nothing.
There was no work buying the pyramids, nothing. It was real simple, couple of pages, a piece of paper, and I took this song. I just took it from that form, and I started playing it on the piano into the vibe that I heard. And it was just more classical and structured. And fade in, I'm in Florida, Sinatra calls, and he said, let's have dinner. I'm doing this movie down here, but let's have dinner tonight. I'll come and see your show. We have dinner. He said, kid, I'm doing one more album with Costin. I'm quitting the business. I'm fed up. I'm getting out. And, you know, he'd been really hassled. Things were going on in his life that he didn't like, and he wanted to quit. So that really moved me. You know, one more album, I'm out of the business. Sinatra, can't believe it. I go back to New York, where I was living at the time, and I started typing. And I said, now, if Sinatra were writing this, you know, not unlike Anka writing something in Rock Swings, what would he say? And I started, and now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain, da-da. And it started to write itself. And I called he and Don Costa, who at the time were out at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. And I said, guys, I've got something for the album, and I just, you need to hear this. And about a few months later, I got a call, knowing that they were in the studio, and Sinatra was on the phone, and he was in L.A., I'm in New York. He said, kid, listen to this. And he put the phone up to the speaker, and that was the first time that I heard Frank Sinatra singing My Way. And I just started to cry. It was just the most emotional moment for me, because I'd never really written anything like that, let alone have Frank Sinatra be the messenger of such, you know, a different song in what was going on back then in the late 60s.
Well, why don't we hear Frank Sinatra singing My Way with a lyric by my guest, Paul Anka.
Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course,
each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt, I ate it up and spit it out. I faced it all and I stood tall and did it my way. I've loved.
That's Frank Sinatra, and the English lyric for My Way was written by my guest Paul Anka. His new CD, Rock Swings, features his new swing versions of rock songs from the 80s and 90s. You show up in so many different aspects of popular culture. You wrote the Tonight Show theme.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get to do that?
Well, you know, a lot of my business is, it all starts with that phone call. and you know, you get phone calls. And this one call, well, let me take you back. It was a call saying I needed some comedy element on a show I was doing in Great Britain for Granada TV, and I needed comedy. And someone called and said, look at this guy, he's funny. And they sent me a film of this guy called Johnny Carson. And I looked at it, and it was this guy, Johnny Carson, who had a morning show for kids. The only problem was that all night he drank, and he showed up with a hangover, and the kids are screaming and yelling, and that didn't fit. So I thought it was a very funny bit, and it was. And I brought him over, and he did the show. We got to know each other a little bit. I came back to New York after that and ran into him and his manager somewhere in a building. And they said, you know, we're thinking of doing this show for a couple of years, the Tonight Show, and we want to change this and want to change that. And I think maybe we need, do you want to write something? And, does the Pope pray? I'm a writer. So I went and I did a demo for about $1,200 of what I heard and put it down, da 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 da, just very simple. And I sent it to him, and I got word back, another phone call saying, you know, you got it. I mean, there was certainly a little wedge in there in that the original band leader, Skitch Henderson, wasn't pleased because he wanted to be his. And what I did at that point was, when I heard that there was some jeopardy, I said, Johnny, take half the song. You can have half the writing and half the publishing. And that just ensured me staying on the air. What I thought would be 3 years, which turned into you know how many, and the longest running TV theme in the history of television.
For listeners just tuning in, my guest is Paul Anka, and his new CD, Rock Swings, features his swing interpretations of rock songs from the 80s and 90s. One more thing in the annals of Paul Anka lore, and this is a website that you probably really hate. I'm sure you know about it. There's a website called The Guys Get Shirts that features...
Oh, yeah, I love it. It's great.
It features a really long tirade where you're bawling out your band. This was recorded a few years ago, probably surreptitiously.
15 years ago by a real snake that we fired after a month that brought a tape machine in. In fact, we had a nice big moment on it with Howard Stern recently.
Oh, did he play it?
Oh, yeah, he played it, and he listened. He absolutely agreed with it. And he said, look, I've done that, I do that, and everybody does. You know, I mean, I think that any guy running a company gets it. The whole point of that tape, I'm a real stickler for detail, and I have a real strong respectability and responsibility to my audience. And when I'm up on that stage... and anything that I do, it's got to be as perfect as possible for the consumer or for whomever. You know, I don't go to work at night and take the check and run. So what was happening there was a lot of mistakes in the band, in the sense that we'd rehearsed it one way, and then when you have a cutoff or you're doing something, everyone has to end together. And the other was that we'd gone spent a lot of money on getting guys dressed so that there was uniformity, and whether it was for the TV show or whatever it was. And guys just drop the ball. A lot of musicians, some of them are drinkers and some of them are doing dope and what have you. And you learn that, you know, later in the gig. It's like hiring people. You know, the resumes are one thing and everybody's on their best behavior. But until you get somewhere into the voyage and realize that, you know, you've got some bad apples in there, that's when you have to deal with it. And yeah, it's a funny tape, you know. Listen, that's me, and I'm that way. You know, I people don't toe the line, they're out.
You really lay into the band on this, and you say things, when I effing move, I slice like an effing hammer. And right. What's it like to really bawl out your band and then be in front of them in a performance? Because when it comes time to perform, you want that band to be really sympathetic, and you want them to play in a moving way. So,
They do. They don't even take light of it. We're having dinner together on Saturday night. It's totally meaningless because they're used to that environment. They've done it with Buddy Rich. They've heard it with Sinatra. You know, these are seasoned guys that really, when you show them those mistakes and you ball them out any way you want, they know the personality and the other side of the person. I mean, I've heard, Tommy Lasorda. I mean, there's like thousands of these tapes out there from Orson Welles to Lasorda. And I think we're all indoctrinated with that and get it. So a band, when you're giving them work, and most of those guys are still with me today, you know, they know the personality, they know when they're wrong, they know how to decipher and edit what all of that is, and it really doesn't come to play whatsoever. I mean, when you're doing this 47 years and you're successful on that stage, every entity is working and all the energies are working. And the other side of the coin is, you know, you're the guy that's loaning the money, that you're doing this for their families, that you're bringing them here. So you got to look at the full mosaic. This is not anything new here. This is a small pebble on the whole infrastructure of business where people hear it. I know how to motivate people and how to treat them, and I've been doing that for years, so I have absolutely no regrets for anything on that whatsoever.
My guest is Paul Anka. His latest CD is called Rock Swings. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our interview with songwriter and singer Paul Anka. You know, when songs are as popular as yours, you never know where and how they will be used. And in a moment, I'd like to ask you to tell us the most unusual place you've heard your song performed or the most unusual way you've heard one of your songs performed. But first, I want to read you a paragraph from an article in the Seattle Times from January 1987. You probably already know about this, but here it goes. President Corazon Aquino's forces used tear gas and Paul Anka records today in a vain bid to get 150 soldiers loyal to ousted strongman Ferdinand Marcos to vacate a TV station they've held since yesterday.
It was in the front page of The Economist.
Okay. About 1,000 troops wearing gas masks were deployed around Channel 7, and about 7 tear gas canisters were fired. Hours before the tear gas assault began, troops played Paul Anka songs over a loudspeaker for the rebels, saying they might enjoy some beautiful music.
Right. That was in the editorial piece of The Economist. Yeah, that was, I've been to the Philippines many times. I go to Asia quite a bit. Your songs are used, obviously, in many different places. I've experienced a myriad of emotions from how they were used. I think the one that really jolted me the most was that, you know, My Way being as important a song for me, coming off of all those adolescent songs, someone called me and said, we're sending you a recording by Sid Vicious and the Sex Pistols. And I said, yeah, okay. And they sent it, and it was My Way. In fact, I dare you to play it when I'm finished.
Oh, I love that version of My Way. Like it, don't you?
Oh, I do like it, absolutely. But they sent back then, you know, it was jolting. I guess it's the other side of the coin somewhat of Anka doing these rock songs for Rock Swings when you think about it. In terms of the strategy and the philosophy, I think he had a right to do it. And once I got past it and realized that he was very sincere and that the song meant something to him, that's when I okayed the license. And that's kind of an interesting case in point. You know, I've seen different artists do them differently, and I've respected the fact that they brought to the table what they were capable of doing with any of my songs and allowed it.
So getting back to this Ferdinand Marcos thing, were they using your records to try to drive...
to calm them down.
To calm them down or to drive them out?
No, I couldn't understand.
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah, they were... I think the economists, what they were saying was that, you know, after implementing everything else that they were doing, they felt that my music was going to, you know, I mean, my music was very popular in Asia. You know, there were times where I had 5 records in the top 10 in Japan or Manila. So that there was, and they, like Europe, take American music a lot differently and deeper. So I think the point of the article was that this music, after everything else, was going to just calm them down a little bit so that they can continue to negotiate with them.
Did it work?
Thank you. Well, there they are today. Yeah, I think it did work.
Do you get royalties when your record is used that way?
I would say no.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It goes into a collective. I don't think somebody's running around with a sheet in the midst of a war and attack.
ASCAP doesn't
sign
show
this
up.
Please sign this.
Paul Anka, his new CD is called Rock Swings.
Today is going to be the day that they're going to throw it back to you. By now, you should have somehow realized what you got to do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. And all the roads we have to walk are winding, and all the lights that lead us there are blinding.